Welcome to the Firehouse Salon, where we take a dive into the madcap world of Howard Luck Gossage and his firehouse gang and the antics they got up to in the 1960s. In this episode, I'm joined again by my co-host James King. We're going to be exploring a specific campaign that Howard and his team worked on for Rayner Ale and a link up with a classical music station. So James, do you want to set this up?
So it all started when one day Gossage got a call from Al Levitt, who owned a local classical music station, KSFR. And Gossage, who was a huge classical music fan, was devastated to learn that basically the radio station was going bankrupt. They'd run out of money. So he agreed to help. He persuaded one of his clients, in this case Rayner Ale, to advertise on the station and give them a sort of cash influx. And everyone was very happy. And then Gossage immediately forgot about the whole thing. So when the day came for the adverts to run on the station, Al called Gossage up and was like, you know, where are they? What are we going to do? And instead of just coming up with a regular ad campaign, in true Gossage style, he sort of racked his brain for something more creative. The thought came to him inspired by actually a Peanuts cartoon in which one of the characters was wearing a Beethoven sweatshirt. And Gossage thought it was a really amusing contradiction, the idea of the stereotypical blue-collar ale drinker sat at the local bar watching a baseball game on TV. The thought of them attending a classical music concert was just amusing to him. And so he came up with the idea that they were going to do a giveaway of Beethoven sweatshirts, which turned out to be such a popular idea that inadvertently started this fashion revolution. Previously, sweatshirts had been very plain. You know, they'd occasionally have the name of your university or your fraternity initials, but no one had really done a graphic sweatshirt in that way before. And so when they promised them and they had to sort of fulfill that promise and they started sending sweatshirts out, it just completely took off. And it was so popular that people started demanding Wolfgang Mozart sweatshirts. And in true Gossage style, it just became a massive viral success bigger than anyone could have anticipated.
I just love the fact with Howard, first of all, with this, that he joined a number of dots together because they also had another client that made shirts. So they were the ones that made the Beethoven sweatshirts. And he's helping the classical music station. I mean, Sarah, Howard's daughter, said that he would often conduct the orchestra playing on the radio in the living room of his home. He loved classical music. Yeah. So he wanted to help. He connected dots together. But as you say, he could have done a simple piece of communication. And instead, as with in many other examples in his life, which we'll come on to later in this series, like the paper aeroplane competition, he sort of accidentally started something much bigger than he needed to and left his imprint on culture as a result. We're just going to play a clip from the Socrates of San Francisco, the radio show that James and I made for the BBC, that gives a few first-hand accounts of how this came about.
One of his clients was a little tiny classical music station that we used to listen to at night. And Howard's greatest thinking often happened in bed. He said, you know, what would be a classical music station's idea of culture? What would be a beer company's idea of class to promote a classical music station?
Amused by the seemingly incongruous image of a blue-collar ale drinker attending a lofty classical music concert, a memory flashed in his mind of an old Peanuts cartoon where one of the characters, Schroeder, wore a sweatshirt with Beethoven's face printed on it. Gossage immediately called up the comic strip's creator, Charles M. Schulz, offering to pay royalties for the concept. Schulz was so entertained by the notion that he waived his fee entirely.
Rayner Ale strikes a blow for culture, a public service advertisement. Be the first highbrow in your neighborhood to own a Beethoven, Brahms, or Bach sweatshirt. In accordance with our policy of bringing culture to the masses, Rayner Ale sponsors an hour-long program 7 nights a week on a San Francisco classical music station, KSFR.
It just flew into his head. It came to him, and the next thing I knew, he was on the phone to Miller Harris in Pennsylvania, and he said, how about, could you all make some sweatshirts? So Miller made some prototype sweatshirts, and we sent the first one to Leonard Bernstein, who was photographed in the New York Times wearing a Beethoven sweatshirt conducting the symphony.
So from an idea that Howard took from a Peanuts cartoon, put out into the world, then we've got the most famous conductor of the day conducting a Beethoven sweatshirt. So it really became a viral moment. We heard a bit there of Peter reading some of Howard's writing, but I think it would be really good to read some more of these ads just to actually give some space for his words. He had quite a way to put together copy, didn't he, James, in terms of his working process?
Yeah, Howard was unashamedly verbose in his copywriting style. To start with, they're incredibly long. So long that famously some of them spilled out from week to week, as in the case of the Irish whiskey ads.
Yes.
So he wasn't afraid to sort of write these diatribes almost. But their winning feature was that they were just so entertaining and amusing and irreverent. No one had really read anything like this before in an ad.
Yes.
But his writing style itself was incredibly fevered and intense. You know, in the firehouse itself, he'd built a sort of turret at the top of the building where he could retreat. And he would often work at night, and he would work for days on end, you know, occasionally coming down to ask Alice Lowe for, you know, a Benzedrine or some kind of stimulant to keep himself going. So he had these marathon writing sessions. As he said before, you know, it was sometimes quite a sort of painful process. He would obviously often be revising ads right up until the deadline. Sometimes he would be trying to revise ads after, you know, after the ad had run. nothing was ever fully finished with Howard because he was a perfectionist.
I mean, I had this vision, obviously, having been following this story for a long old while, of him crafting these kind of masterpieces like his Mona Lisa. And then much more recently, Alice Lowe, all of her archive came out, and I spent a whole day going through it. And I realized the sheer quantity of what was being produced out of the firehouse, not just by Howard, but also his team, by Jerry and Alice. I mean, I want to read from one of these ads. You heard Peter introducing the start of the first Beethoven sweatshirt ad. But it says here that this sort of entertainment is a trifle too starchy for our own taste, is unimportant compared to the pleasure it gives others. Besides, we're 1,000 miles away in Seattle, so we couldn't hear it if we wanted to. Do you want to know the real reason? Okay, the real reason is we did a survey that shows the people who like our product the most are either highbrows or lowbrows. It costs a lot of money to reach lowbrows because there's so many of them, and they aren't a particularly grateful bunch either, probably because everybody wants to do something for them. You ask them to run down to the store and buy some, but do they? No. Highbrows, on the other hand, are pitifully grateful for anything you do for them. It sort of gets you. They may not be numerous, but by golly, they can sure sprint down to the store. I mean, one thing that comes up for me, and that's not even half the ads, is he put his beliefs and his sort of the way he saw the world into his ads. I mean, that's a comment on mass marketing. He talked a lot about, why do you need advertising for soap powders? People will still wash their clothes even if they don't see an ad. And so he liked to pick clients where it was something that he really believed in. And I love the fact in this copy that he's playing to that. He's saying, I'm with the highbrows, basically. I want to be talking to you. So he's kind of picked a channel to talk to the highbrows. And he's basically saying, we're one of you.
Yeah. And he's talking again about this interactivity. You know, he's talking about doing surveys, and everything was a conversation with Howard, you know, between himself and the reader, his audience who was constantly trying not to talk down to. And whose intelligence he never insulted. And I think, again, this is part of his practice, is Howard was not someone who would write the copy for an ad campaign, lock it in, and then that would just roll out over the course of 3, 6, 9 months. He would write an ad, put it out into the world, and then the next week he would, you know, responding on the feedback from that ad, write a completely new ad.
Yes.
You know, everything was a conversation, everything was interactive, which is in some senses a deeply, you know, inefficient and uneconomic way of doing things. You know, imagine trying to get that past the company who's paying for these ad campaigns. But again, this is a forerunner to social media, where everything is now shorter term. Everything is now based on feedback loops and reactive, and it's new, it's different, it's ever changing. Hal was doing this in a time when things were very rigid and pre-prepared and inflexible.
I mean, it's funny you say that about social media, and you're completely right, it is a feedback loop. But in a way, I think what's happened there is it's like a digital feedback loop of effectiveness, rather than really caring about what people enjoy about a piece of communication. It's just, oh, that one seemed to capture their attention, let's do more of that. Whereas what Howard
it's
was doing...
It's soulless and depersonalized and completely, well, cynical, I guess.
Yeah. Whereas what he was, he really cared, right? I mean, on one of the ad campaigns, he published a book based on the responses. He's like, I understand you. I want you to be part of this conversation. Let's enjoy this. And so, I mean, with this campaign, another key element was, and to read from the first ad again, the sweatshirts, they are in athletic, but it's spelled athletic. Anyway, they're in athletic grey and two large sizes only, men and women. They fit anybody in a roomy sort of way if you shove the cuffs up. Now, on the front is a life-size head of either Beethoven, Brahms or Bach, exactly as pictured, each with his name below to identify him to uninitiated passers-by. The price, a mere $4 each. We'd like to give them away, but state laws and our own prudence forbid it. So, I mean, there's a few things in there. It's like, first of all, what interests me is everyone knows them as the Beethoven sweatshirts, but there were Brahms ones and Bach ones, and people asked for Mozart ones. And the other thing is this involvement, but not giving something away for free, but sort of requiring you not just to cut out a coupon, but if you want to be part of this party, giving a bit of your money to be part of it, which is interesting.
Howard was always a big advocate for paying for things. You know, this comes right back to his views on the press. The fact that newspapers, magazines cost less to purchase than they do to produce.
Yeah.
And that difference is subsidized by advertising, and something he was always inherently completely against, because it makes the publications beholden to their advertisers.
Yes.
Whereas he felt that, you know, advertising almost should be a fun extra, an option, but it shouldn't be a necessity for something's economic survival.
Yes.
So he was always, always trying to basically charge what something cost in order to not compromise on the quality of the product.
Yeah, completely. I mean, the other interesting thing with this is it starts out with trying to help a classical music station. And the first ads, I believe, were just in the Bay Area. But the response to that, on another ad here, the response was so enormous that we're extending the offer to music lovers the country over. So almost Rainer Ale, a bit like Bex did a few years back, it's probably 20 years back when I was younger, sponsored kind of music, or Red Bull have associated themselves with extreme sports. Yeah. I think what happened, or my take on it, is Rainer Ale were like, this is great, where do we go now? So what happened next is brilliant. I love it. There was this, if I understand it right from what Sally told me, this coach Stahl, who
coach
was this
Stahl,
he was this old guy who was doing these kind of long walks. So what happened next, I think, brilliant, is Howard's obviously trying to think, well, how can we extend this, how can we make this more of a national thing? And he comes across this guy, Coach Stahl, who was an old guy, must have been in his 70s, maybe older, who was doing these kind of marathon walks. And so the next ad comes out, which I've got it here, headline, Coach Stahl wants you to walk to Seattle. And on the front of his body, of course, is the face of Beethoven. And the ad begins, yes, this is your chance to win a free trip to Seattle's Century 21 World's Fair. And the beauty of it is that you'll be able to enjoy the great outdoors every step of the 1,000 miles from the Opera House in San Francisco to Seattle and the Space Needle. What finer way to reassure man that he will still be able to fill his lungs with fresh air amongst the marvels of the 21st century.
Coach Stahl was an interesting figure in and of himself, because he had this lifelong grudge against, he was a US postal worker, you know, he was a postman. And he'd been forcibly retired on disability
that.
In 1935. And he'd spent the rest of his life proving his former employers wrong by doing these marathon walks. So he was in himself a very sort of Gossage-esque rebellious figure, thumbing right. his nose at, you know, a bureaucracy that he felt had... I guess he was being paid by them for the rest of his life, so he wasn't too short-changed, but yes. he just felt insulted by him, the irony of this organisation deeming him unfit to walk his post route, so he does these cross-country walks instead. It's quite good fun.
There's such lovely humour in these. I mean, there's some more text here. However, man does not live by breath alone. In line with Rainer Ale's policy of combining the cultural with the vigorously masculine, you will, of course, be wearing one of our Beethoven, Bach or Brahms sweatshirts as the glorious miles trudge by. Expenses en route will be paid and you'll be fully equipped from sweatshirt to shoes. So basically, he gets people to engage with getting a sweatshirt, which carries on in this ad. But now he's asking people, as it says here, all this if you can qualify as one of the three-man teams to leave San Francisco the day the fair opens. Applicants must be between 21 and 65 and have about 3 months to spare so they won't have to hurry. This is no race. Coach Stahl, shown left, is against walking for any reason except pleasure and physical improvement.
Yeah, I mean, these are real pilgrimage-length expeditions, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, it says here, actually, that he was going to celebrate his 80th birthday on this walk. I remember talking to Sally about this because she shared photographs of the Golden Gate Bridge because the team that they get. So this is also interesting. I did a campaign for lastminute.com, which yeah. was kind of borrowing slightly from this. It was to find a spontaneity champion. And yeah. what I thought about was when we put the campaign out, we were talking to everyone about being more spontaneous, but I always thought that the people that would actually apply would actually be quite a small group of people. But then you put them out as almost ambassadors of the message. And that's kind of what happened here, because I don't know if there were, well, it says here, the next ad, Coach Stahl and his team set off and walking. Chosen from over 700 applicants who answered our appeal, the three finalists selected by Coach represent a broad, if interesting, cross-section of American manhood. They include a Scots bagpiper, a millionaire, and a soldier of fortune, and then proceeds to tell the story of each of those people, from Charles Knowles, 28, pipe major of the Fraser Highlanders, Herbert Hash, 62, a millionaire whose fortune is based on an invention which gives solace to each of us who rides in a car, since it apparently has to do with the springing system, and Robert Lemaire, a professional adventurer explorer who spent his life seeing the world the hard way. I think Howard was very much of this view that he would keep doing interesting stuff until he ran out of ideas. I can't remember which client he ended up giving up because he just couldn't think of anything anymore. Because he just had this
desire. Yeah, it was a client they'd had for many years, wasn't it? Oh my goodness, I'm trying to remember. I'm pretty sure it was Rover or one of the car companies.
Right.
But I mean, it also comes back to this whole thing, you know, obviously it generated months and months of free publicity. And it comes back to this idea that Howard was very good value.
Yes.
As an advertiser, because the amount of press that was generated by these campaigns is enormous, but it's only because they are interesting in and of himself. It's just like the paper airplane competition. The idea is press-worthy,
yeah.
and that in itself is the campaign. We know that he sort of eschewed the kickback system, and how it was quite expensive because they would charge a fee up front that was more than most agents. He didn't believe in spending that much money on the advertising campaign. I think the budget for the Rain Ale campaign ended up being about $32,000.
Yes.
Which is, you know, if you imagine his 35% of that wouldn't have been enough to run a business. Most of that cost was actually the creative fees.
Yes.
But the column inches they got, you know, the press coverage would have cost millions.
It keeps coming up for me at the moment on LinkedIn. AI keeps coming up, and I don't want to jump too much into that conversation. But this type of work just, again, makes me think so clearly that brilliant ideas kind of really are noticeable. And I love the fact that he plays between the humorous, the made up, the real, you know, coach style as a proper character, getting people to actually participate and become the people that are in the campaign. It's dancing around in a playful, beautiful way, amazing storytelling. And I think that is still incredibly applicable today.
Yeah, and I mean, everything Howard did was based on operating outside of the box. You know, AI can only operate within the confines and parameters that you set for it.
Yeah.
An AI program would never make a connection between a classical music station, an ale, and a peanuts cartoon. It just is, you know, that is not something that you can program into a computer and anticipate.
Yeah.
It is the magic of these ideas that came to Howard almost through divine inspiration, but
yes,
through whatever synapses were firing off in his mind that particular day. It's the randomness of some of these ideas, and it comes back to the anarchic randomness of his early campaigns, you know, the free kangaroo giveaway for a Australian airline company. Again, that's not something that AI is going to be able to come up with because it is absurd.
Yes.
It is illogical, whereas AI is inherently logical. You can't program a sense of anarchy into a system
yes.
that is based on binary code at its essence.
Yeah. I mean, to close on this episode, there's a bit of his writing. So the Book of Gossage, as listeners to this podcast, carry on listening. If you want to really dive into Gossage, you need to find this book, which is out of print. Wonderful book. Anyway, in the middle of it is a number of articles he wrote. And I'm just going to leave you with some of his words titled How to Be Creative About Next to Nothing at All. People are always asking me to teach other people how to be as creative as I am. I've written a little about it already, but there are various other things to consider. For instance, being able to think of something at the last possible minute. In anybody else, it would be called a lack of foresight. In creative people, it's called creativity.